Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, Kirtner and Kerr listeners, both those live and those that will most certainly listen later. I am Thomas Kirtner with the Kirtner and Kerr Show. Kirtner and Kerr is a radio talk show hosted on Blog Talk Radio and also recorded locally on Blount County, Tennessee Radio AM 1470 during live sessions and uploaded to our BTR site. Thanks goes to Tim Cox for his outstanding work with Chris Kerr in doing those 1470 sessions. We will be updating our website and info to include him as soon as feasible, as he has been an unsung hero for a few years now, keeping the CNK show going in my absence. You will see many BTR shows referencing him. Tonight, Kirtner and Kerr is excited to present an update with Thomas Fusco as we discuss some of the paranormal as well as the normal, and how supergeometry, a theory being developed and refined by Thomas, may figure into a theory of everything, allowing us concrete explanations for what we are seeing, perceiving as reality. Thomas P. Fusco has devoted nearly three decades of research into the relationship between mind, physics, spirituality, parapsychology, scientific anomalies, and paranormal phenomena with the goal of uncovering the unifying cosmological framework. That's called a theory of everything for you physicists out there. That has eluded mankind for many generations. He has been invited to speak as a guest on over 100 national and international radio programs, including Coast to Coast AM. His website is www.cosmicveil.com. That's CosmicVeil.com. And I want to take this moment at the beginning of the show to urge our listeners to go to his website and consider ordering his book, Behind the Cosmic Veil, A New Vision of Reality. I have found it personally intriguing on many levels and very thought-provoking, and have recommended it to my scientist friends through the years for their consideration as a way to approach describing reality. I think that you will find it very interesting, and as many of our listeners believe in the things written in the biblical scriptures, as do Kirtner and Kerr, perhaps it will help us to understand some of the things that might at first glance seem mystical or possibly confusing from the scriptures. Also, go to Thomas's website and brush up on several of the topics of supergeometry, as he has graciously posted many definitions and explanations thereupon. From what is supergeometry to explanations such as why is physics so important to the spiritual and the supernatural, quantum mechanics, the paranormal, and hypocrisy, that sounds intriguing, all the way to topics as diverse as aliens and UFOs. Yes, the UFOs had to figure in somewhere here. All of these things are figuring into his theory, so this will be a very broad-based discussion. Supergeometry is very interesting and covers a lot of ground. Welcome to Kirtner and Kerr, Thomas. I understand that you're kind of in the path of Irma and the hurricane right now, and that's very dangerous.
Oh, we're dead on it. I think my house be right in the middle of the eye the way they're saying it's going to come.
Oh, no. We wish the best for you and yours. I mean, we want the Lord to save this another event. I know that you're worried about your neighbors as well as yourself, and I hope you guys get out of there and are safe when it's time.
Well, I appreciate it very much. I worry more about the property here and those kinds of damages. As far as me myself, I know that the Lord is not yet finished with this sorry creature here, so I know I'll still be around.
Yeah, as long as he wants us here, we'll be here, won't we? You know,
yes,
even familiar with your work for several years, Thomas, I still find myself having to read things to reinforce the concept. I mean, you've made it really simple for the layperson, but it still somewhat complex because you're pretty much pulling together everything really from everywhere in this theory. So thank you again for joining us. And, you know, for the next 45 minutes or so, we'd like to be your pupils and you be a teacher, lecturer, or maybe we could start with a question or two and you can kind of go from there.
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's a couple different ways to approach this. And what we're talking about, I think, which is what my theory of supergeometry tries to address, is what is the true nature of reality? We know that we live in an orderly universe. We've known that for some time. Actually, even when I was a kid going to school, we in the scientific community were still not absolutely certain that there were immutable laws that governed everything in the universe. We didn't know whether other parts of the universe might have different laws of nature. We didn't know that.
That's true.
Yes, we're very confident now. There's a number of different ways that we can figure that out. When we look out into the distances, the vast distances of the universe, and analyze the light that's coming to us from those places with spectral analysis, it corresponds and conforms precisely to the measurements that we see locally. And the mathematics that we use to calculate those measurements locally are the same ones that can be used accurately at the very far reaches of the universe that we can see. So that we know that the laws of the universe are the same throughout the realm.
Well, definitely in the macro universe, it doesn't quite apply to the micro universe, though, does it?
Well, you know, my theory addresses that, and on the surface, that's true. I mean, Einstein once said that quantum physics, which is the study of the microscopic, so to speak, the micro universe. Mm-hmm. He said, it's impressive, but I don't believe that God rolls dice.
Yeah,
and
of course.
So in my theory, and again, we're going to jump back and forth with this. There's a lot to it, as you know. But to address what you're talking about there, the problem that we have with understanding quantum field theory or quantum mechanics or quantum physics, the study of the subatomic realm, is that it does seem to follow very different rules than what we see in the macro universe or the relativistic universe, which is best described by Einstein and Newtonian principles. Our problem is that we have not been able to reconcile these two. And so for me, I think that the problem is that physics looks upon this as what I call a two-state reality. So we have the quantum state, and we have the relativistic state, the micro and the macro. And we can't reconcile these, and they're at times seem to be diametrically opposed to one another, although all of physics is in general agreement that out of this apparent random and chaotic quantum realm arises a universe of incredible order. So there's something missing in our understanding. And in supergeometry, what I propose is a three-state reality. And what that three-state reality is the supergeometric. You could call this the non-physical. You could call it the superphysical. You could call it the pre-physical. There's been all kinds of philosophical and spiritual, religious names for it. There's a few scientific terms for it as well. But we have the supergeometric, which is not physical. Then on the other side, we have the relativistic state, which is fully materialized. It's an important word, materialized. We'll go back to this from time to time. Now, when we look at that model, we see the quantum state in between, in the middle. suddenly it opens up a door in our thinking and our understanding that the reason why the quantum state looks the way it does is it is a state in the process of materializing into full reality. So we have the source of reality, which is the pre-physical, the non-physical, the supergeometric, the singular realm from which the universe emerged with the Big Bang.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have this quantum state where we are actually witnessing the process of reality materializing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not yet fully unfolded. It's not yet fully materialized. The constructs, the spatial fabric, geometric fabric of space and time is not fully unfolded. That's why it acts in the strange ways that it does.
Is
but
that kind of like
it is a process. Go ahead.
That
I'm
kind
sorry.
Of like, that's fine. Is that kind of like when you speak? And I think this is from several years ago. It's almost like in the super geometric realm, all the archetypes of anything we're ever going to imagine or create in our mind exist there, and then this quantum state is where that's actually coming to fruition, and then, of course, we see it in reality
yes.
later. Wow.
Exactly, because dimensions of time and space are unfolding. I mean, this is a, almost a cataclysmic concept. It
you
has
mean
been
like
talked about...
Life?
About paradigm destroying of the old paradigm. It's one of those kinds of concepts. It's been around in philosophy and, religious thought for a very long time. And it's been speculated upon by certain theoretical physicists, but they never were able to fully abandon their what they call the physicalism, or what I call the materialistic view of the universe, which is what dominates physics today, which is reality is all that is physical, and all that is physical is reality, and nothing exists beyond that. And of course, when we talk about these kinds of processes, then we begin to we are able to unify and merge with things that seem on the surface very unscientific, let's say like certain biblical principles. Because, you know, here's the thing. And I know we have a Christian, good Christian audience. It's a Christian-based show. I talk on a lot of paranormal shows and that type of theme. So I don't normally, I'm not able normally to get deeply into the Christian aspects of this. But, if we are going to accept biblical principles and biblical descriptions of the way things are, then as men of science in the 21st century, we have to accept the idea that these principles have real physical representations, that these things that we're talking about, these matters of faith, are also, in a sense, physiological. They're not just this ambiguous hocus pocus.
Right.
They're not these vaporous and indistinct or imprecise thoughts and concepts. You know, if we do have a creator that created the universe, and the universe was created in that order that was in the creator, then, and if we further say that the word of God is a reflection of that same divine order, then the Word of God must lay out principles that can tell us an awful lot about the way that the Creator put the universe together.
Yes.
And we were talking, if we're talking about a Creator, we know that the universe had a beginning. we are talking about that creator initiating the process that brought the universe into being. So yeah. We're right at the heart of cosmological sciences and physics with that.
Mm-hmm.
I was taking a breath. Let you guys ask me something. You know?
That's fine. One of the things that was curious to me is, having read, you know, the book and really studied it some, I just wondered what they claim to have found the Higgs boson, and you know, how does that impact supergeometry? Is it just another way for them to describe it in a complicated fashion? Which I think when I think you might have a TOE that's better.
Well, this is a difficult. I'll try to answer it in a brief Reader's Digest version as best as I can, because it is a complex subject. First of all, the audience needs to know that what what they received in the news media as public consumption, fed to them by the scientific community, and then sensationalized by the media, is not the whole truth. It is far more complex than what we are, than what the reality, the scientific reality is. The scientific reality is that, yes, they have found a particle of the right type of weight, the right mass, in the giga electron range that it's supposed to be. That's close to what was originally predicted. That appears to fill that need in the standard model of the universe. There was a missing element, and the element, the physical element in the standard model of the universe, is what gave particles mass. Because without mass, you cannot have order and structure. All you've got is all these massless particles flying around the universe at the speed of light, and no coherent structure can coagulate from those things. So something had to give these things mass to kind of make them sticky, to kind of make them heavy, to kind of make them into blocks of clay that can be molded and formed into physical structures and to establish an order, of universal materialization, so to speak. The problem is that they're still working on the problem that this Higgs field, which these particles were supposed to go through, the Higgs boson being the particulate form of the Higgs field, just like an electron is a particulate form of the electromagnetic field.
Right.
That field in many of the models has a value of infinity.
Really?
And that's not possible. Yes.
No?
This is stuff you don't hear in the news. The modifier to the
gap, I guess.
It's a physical impossibility.
Yeah.
In other words, there are two values within the realm of the physical universe. There are two values that are impossible, infinity and zero.
Right.
There is no value in the universe that can equal zero because everything is something, even the fabric of space-time. Is something. There's nothing in the universe that is no thing. And there's nothing in the universe that is infinite because everything is subject to spatial and temporal dimensions.
Right.
Even the universe itself had a beginning, so it, by definition, it's impossible for it to be infinite because then it would have not had a beginning. So that's one problem with the Higgs boson. The other problem with the Higgs boson, even if they could figure that all out, it only explains about 5% of the mass that's in the universe.
Well, that's
the other 95%, the Higgs boson cannot provide an explanation for.
So there must
that's
be others.
Difficulty.
There may be others. This can go on for a long time.
My point is this, and again, I'm trying to give Reader's Digest versions of things. If any of the audience wants to look up any of these scientific or physics concepts online, there's hours and hours of reading out there for you. But the thing is that the standard model, which is what the standard model means, capital S, capital M, is a description of all the fundamental particles and forces in the universe, the basic constituents, and how they behave and how that, excuse me, works to put together the universe. And there's only six of them. We had five for a long time. We knew there was an empty slot we had to fill. The Higgs boson was the one that imparts mass. That was the missing element. However, we know that it's imperfect. And the big elephant in the room in the standard model is it has no expression for gravity. It has no explanation for what gravity is. And according to the standard model, gravity is not a force at all because it's not expressed in a wave or a particle. There isn't even any place to put a graviton in the standard model. There's no place to plug it in. All the holes are filled already. So this shows us that the standard model only kind of gives us an image of what is what I call fully materialized reality. And so gravity is a materialization, but it's not something that that responds to physical analysis. We know its influence, but there is no particle or force that's involved with it. It just is. It's what Einstein called spooky action at a distance. Which means there's no local connection. Let's say the moon. And again, I'm trying to give Reader's Digest explanations because I know we have limited time. And this is what you didn't get taught in school. What gravity actually is and is not. Here we have the moon. It rotates around the Earth. It orbits, I mean, around the Earth. We understood it's held in place by the force of gravity. Yet, there is no particle or wave that is connecting the two objects locally. In other words, it's not like we have an electromagnetic field where we have electromagnetic waves, propagation waves, and we have electrons that, you know, if you put a light, you know, like a fluorescent light in a bulb in the presence of a strong electromagnetic field, it will excite the, you know, the molecules inside and it will light the bulb. But there is a physical connection between the source of the electromagnetic field and the light bulb. And that physical connection are the particle and waves of the electromagnetic field. Gravity, there is none. That moon is just hanging there in space, running around the Earth with nothing connected to it. So, you know, in my theory, I call that a paranormal phenomenon because it is it's non-local. There's nothing locally connecting the two objects that are influencing one another.
Okay, continue. That's really interesting because how does supergeometry explain it?
Well, supergeometry takes a little bit of a different approach. First of all, let's talk. We have to look at Einstein's relativity. Einstein's expression of gravity had to do with the idea that space is a substance. It is a substantial field, whereas Newtonian theory and before considered space to be an empty void. Newton said that space was an empty void occupied with matter that moved through time. That was his model of the universe. Einstein said there was no distinction between these things at a certain level, that space and time, matter and energy were all part of the same thing.
Right.
And that the spatial field is actually a substantive field and it actually bends in the presence of material objects. And so what he said gravity was a smaller object being caught within the bends of space around a larger object and kind of spiraling down to the larger object, almost like something spinning down a funnel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why there's no particle.
Which, but it's not necessarily doing that because the moon's actually moving further away from the Earth.
Well, you know, all these things are dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm not an astronomer, so I'm not up on the latest things with that. I work with, you know, the building blocks of how things are put together.
Right.
So, but either way, you know, it's very possible for it to go closer or further. There's a lot of dynamics involved. But from a cosmological standpoint, cosmology, physical cosmology,
mm-hmm.
we have to accept the fact that there's nothing physical connecting the Earth and the Moon in terms of a force. That's why there's no place for it in the standard model. It's not a particle. It's not a force. This is a function of the geometry of space-time. So here's something where we can't explain. We still can't explain what gravity is precisely. And that's kind of the elephant in the room with that. Now, according to supergeometric theory, and here's what's interesting about it. Once we accept a third state of reality that is not physical, and moreover, that the third state of reality, or I should say the first state of reality, is the causation of the other two, that both the quantum realm and the relativistic realm emerges from the non-physical supergeometric realm. It makes that primary reality. That means then that gravity is a function of activity that is going on in the supergeometric realm. It mm-hmm. is a non, what we would call in physics, a non-local phenomenon. This has huge implications. First of all, it explains that the reason why we have so much more gravitational effect in the universe than we have matter to account for it is that, number one, the matter really is not generating the gravity in the conventional, according to the conventional view.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, that we really don't have an imaginary substance like dark matter, that it doesn't exist.
Which they keep looking for.
Yes, and cannot find. And our beginning, physics is beginning to give up on it and realize they have to come up with a new model. I joke with people sometime when they understand my theory. I say, well, the physicists will catch up. It'll take some time.
Yeah.
You know, and I say that in a kind of a tongue-in-cheek way, because when they do it, they will do it for real. And they will do it with all the power and the authority and the thoroughness and the precision that the field of science and physics has. My
mm-hmm.
theory is almost like the imaginative drawings of Leonardo da Vinci.
The thought experiments of Einstein.
Yes, yes. Where, you know, like, for example, Da Vinci would, you know, build would draw an airplane.
Mm-hmm.
And he would have in the drawing a space that was called unknown power source.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so he envisioned all these tanks and machines. We know all about this, you know, the submarines and the airplanes, helicopters.
Mm-hmm.
All this stuff he envisioned. And so my theory, I relate it to something like that. It is a conceptual theory. And you have to have the concepts first before the hard science comes later.
Yeah.
Now, here's the crazy thing. Here's the crazy thing, and this is where it starts merging everything together, especially when we talk about a creator. And there's another aspect of all this that I want to get in before the end of the show. But
okay.
What this means, now, everybody, just stop and think about this for a minute. What the ramifications of supergeometric theory is, when it comes to the idea of gravity is that we don't have these objects like stars and planets and moons hanging in space generating a field of gravity around them. But just the opposite is true, that the effects from the pre-physical, from the super geometric, establishes the fabric, the geometry of space-time. And that geometry is pimpled. It's dimpled. And in those dimples, we have gravitational fields generated by the bending of that space-time itself, and then in which matter materializes.
Okay.
In other words, that gravity well is not generated by the planet, but the planet materializes inside of the gravity well. We're talking about cracking the very code of creation itself.
That's pretty interesting.
Now, what's my evidence? What evidence can I draw from established physics? The Big Bang. The Big Bang theory. In fact, it wasn't that too long ago, that much time ago, where there was a buzz about physicists thought they had detected the gravity wave that was the result of the Big Bang.
Yes.
Do you guys remember reading about that?
Yes, I remember something
okay.
about
it. All right. Where did that gravity wave come from before there was any mass?
Let there be light.
Ah, well, sort of. From a physics point of view, my position is that it was the actual expanding bubble of space-time that began at event one that itself generated a gravitational field. Because at the beginning, we had this giant bubble of space-time expanding with gravitational fields, and there was no mass.
That's true.
So it's funny, the refutation of the materialistic model of physics is staring them right in the face. So what I'm saying is there's something happened in the creational process that caused the fabric of space-time that was created to be pimpled, to be bent and twisted. And then the material began to coagulate inside of those dimples. No need to explain dark matter. It's not necessary. The only need for dark matter is from a materialist who says all of reality has to be physical. So if we measure aspects of reality that we can't explain with material, then we simply have to make up imaginary material to explain it. I mean, it's that stupid simple, folks.
Yes.
It really is. Now, here comes the other element. This is the other half of it, guys. This is where we get into really the creation of God, the understanding of Jesus Christ, paranormal phenomenon, and actually the order and structure of the universe altogether, is the idea of information.
Is this
the other half of the equation.
Is this the paranormal?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Is this the paranormal mechanics explanation coming now?
Well, it's a beginning part of it. We have a limited time. I've actually been on three-hour interviews that at the end the host said, my goodness, we just scratched the surface.
Right, I can understand that.
But yes, I use paranormal phenomena as a body of data and in which to formulate an idea of what I call paranormal mechanics. My theory is this. The universe is a system. Now, this is a scientifically acceptable principle, what I'm going to explain. We study in science systems and subsystems. Now, subsystems can grow in great complexity, but they will never be contrary to or transcend the laws and principles that govern the system from which the subsystem arose. Therefore, if we look at the universe as a system, and it is, paranormal phenomena is a subsystem that emerges from that system. Therefore, it must conform to the laws and principles that govern the greater system in which that paranormal phenomena is a part. So if we don't, if we don't have the understanding of what the mechanics behind paranormal is, it's this big, you know, sore thumb. It's this big black eye in our established theories that tell us that they are far from complete. They're either incomplete or there's something fundamentally wrong with them because they don't have an expression for paranormal phenomena in them.
That's correct.
You know, this is where what I'm talking about now is where, unfortunately, a lot of the other communities, you know, disciplines don't have the scientific knowledge to look at it this way, and where the scientific field looks at these things as here be monsters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just, it's easier for them to say, hey, we're the boss. We sit on the top of the, you know, the top of the throne. We have our established theories. We have our way. We have our own gurus. We have our own prophets that pronounce our edicts for us.
Mm-hmm.
And we simply don't have to address these things. Who the heck are you? You guys are the serfs out there plowing the fields while the royalty is sitting in here growing fat inside the castle.
That's a good analogy.
that's, and believe me, in close scientific circles, we're all grunts.
Mm-hmm.
We are all the great unwashed.
Yeah.
There's two breeds. There's the intelligentsia and the great unwashed. And that really is. That's the way the philosophy is. You guys are too stupid. They were hoping to take over the world with global warming.
Yeah, they tried.
To scare the great unwashed so much that in order for them to survive, they were going to have to cede control of the world to the scientists.
Mm-hmm.
And they, of
mm-hmm.
course, think that they're the best ones to run things and know what's best for everyone.
Yeah.
But we're getting into socio-political whatever with that. go ahead.
I said it happens. Don't worry about it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, when you're talking about life, the universe, and everything, it's hard not to, you know, to touch on those kinds of things. Information. Listeners, you want to think about this because information is a big key. You know, we've talked about a little bit about the raw clay. You know. The formula, you know, if we're going to talk about Christianity, we're talking about the Bible, we're talking about the formless matter.
Mm-hmm.
As it says in another place, God made the universe out of formless matter. The earth was void and formless. So that's the substance. But we understand also in the Bible that God spoke the word light. I don't think it was, let there be light. I think it was far more authoritative than that.
Mm-hmm.
And that raw material conformed itself to the information in that word and materialized into physical reality. When the universe began in the Big Bang, everything in the universe began to materialize according to the exact same pattern. This is the other place that the physicists fear to tread. They say, well, we only study what's physical, so we don't have to worry about what happened before it was physical. We don't have to concern ourselves too much with it. everything, in other words, the primordial particles, like like the neutrinos, for example, there's a handful of them. Everywhere in the early universe materialized according to the exact same model. There wasn't a papa and a mama particle that tried to have children back and forth until suddenly through some Darwinian evolutionary process came out with a neutrino. Neutrinos mm-hmm. began to emerge everywhere in the early universe, every place in it, according to the same model, the same pattern, as the best as we can understand. That means the information from which the neutrino was assembled predates physical reality.
Yeah,
it existed prior to the emergence of the universe.
Okay.
So, what does that tell us? That tells us that information can exist independently of what is physical, and that information is able to be materialized. There's that word again. I mentioned earlier, that's important. Information is able to be materialized into physical reality through some cosmic process. But the important part is that it is stored non-physically. It is stored outside of the physical universe. Now, from a Christian term, we would understand, if we understand the mystical implications, the real deeper implications of the first paragraph of John, and we look at the root word for the word, which is logos.
Mm-hmm.
And logos is a Greek philosophical term. It existed about 500 years before that gospel was written, about 500 years before Christ. That means thought, image, pattern, idea, form, blueprint. There's really no English equivalent to it. But the writer of John understood this. He understood the concept that all things were made through him. And Paul reiterates, all things in him hold together. So this was a concept that was understood back then. Now, mm-hmm. if we go into parapsychology, for example, let's talk about Edgar Cayce for a second. He called it the Akasha.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all different names. Plato called it forms.
Mm-hmm.
Jung
called it archetype.
David, there you go. There's always been a place for this. Supergeometry is the first thing that's actually put a concrete definition to it and gives some description as to what it actually is constructed of and how it functions.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we go on modern, 20th century, one of the most famous physicists, David Bohm, called it implicate order.
Mm-hmm.
Finkelstein called it coherent superpositions.
Mm-hmm.
De Broglie called it guide waves. You know,
okay.
They all had this name for this non-physical repository of information. Everybody learned in school of the conservation laws of mass energy. Matter and energy can neither be created nor destroyed.
Yeah.
In the last couple decades, we've understood the importance of information so much that we have an extension to those laws called quantum unitarity that says the information from which mass and energy is assembled itself can neither be created nor destroyed.
Uh-huh. I didn't know that.
So information, yes, well, that's because it's not public, public consumption.
So really,
it's one of the things. Go ahead.
Yeah, they're advocating supergeometry right there.
Yes, the pieces have always been there. But it was really what this was a combination. The beginning of this process that came up with supergeometric theory was, first of all, the concept that we accept observable phenomena as evidence. And we don't discard any observable phenomena. And one of the classes of phenomena that science has discarded was paranormal phenomena.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Or even in what we call, you know, in Christian thought, what we would call as miracles, which really are paranormal phenomena.
Yeah.
No. Again, I talk about this in my book. We're talking about the processes of reality that God put in place. We are not talking about good or evil in terms of the processes that God made.
Mm-hmm.
Good and evil is has to do with the source and the intent. You know, baseball bat can be used in a game or as a murder weapon. It doesn't make the baseball bat good or evil.
Right.
So the process by which something supernatural, let's use the word supernatural, because paranormal phenomena and biblical miracles, Christian miracles, miracles of faith, can fall under that same category. The supernatural is not in itself good or evil. The same mechanism that God built into the universe to materialize information into its physical equivalent was the exact same process used both by Moses and the Egyptian court priests to change sticks of wood into snakes.
Yes, that is.
It's the same mechanic. It was who did it and to what intent that made it good and evil.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where Christians sometimes get a little bit too high on their hog, and they kind of get, I don't know whether what you would call it, dogmatic.
Yeah.
Everything in the paranormal is demonic, and so even talking about it is demonic, and everybody that's involved with it is demonic, and you know, UFOs are demonic, and you know, okay. Maybe the source of that, you might be right. It could be from the dark side. And in that
mm-hmm.
way, you could call it demonic. But you can't lump the physical processes that God made to create everything and to make miracles possible. You can't lump that process in with what's good or evil.
Yeah, that's true.
God made it. You know, so it has to be part of reality. And, you know, God made good things out of those same processes. So it can't be the process itself. Somebody asked me a question. I need to take a breath.
Go, Chris. Are you still with us?
Well, I'm here, but... I'm just kind of enjoying it. I'm happy we're on the air again, Thomas. It's like old times. I noticed we talked back in 2012, and what an incredible time we have to live in. And we do have our thoughts and prayers with you and your family to be in the Ocala area during this time. And the laws of physics are working as they should. The things are spinning very fast. And things are flying out from the center, but I don't know if we have any callers or not, Thomas. Do we?
There were a couple that appeared and not, but I can't tell. I'm not on that part of the host
mm-hmm.
the board here. Tim is not calling.
I can say let's give out your information again.
Because we're actually kind of. About the five-minute mark. Thomas, you're right. This 3 hours would probably not even scratch the surface. This is fascinating. And, I want to encourage everyone to please go to his site. That's cosmicveil.com. And look at this material and consider ordering the book, you know. Help out Brother Thomas. If nothing else, you know, he's written an excellent book.
Yeah, thank you very much. And it's important for Christians to understand that there is finally a logical, sensible model that gives realistic explanations for the way things are. It gives a physiological explanation for the foundations of our spiritual beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, you know, it's not one of those things like you normally see. Well, you know, we studied the footprints that were next to the dinosaurs, and that tells us that the Earth is 6,000 years old. And no. It's not the old garbage that has been fed and circulated for a long time. This is something very different. When you can describe the order of Jesus Christ and take it to come up with a model, a working model of gravity, oh, this is something far beyond anything that's been worked before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This strengthens faith. It also builds bridges with non-believers. There are many people of good heart and good intent that simply cannot accept Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no way it makes sense to them. You know, and I was there. I was one of them once. So I understand. Mm-hmm. But this forms a bridge. This theory forms a bridge where all these different parties can get together and find common ground and
mm-hmm.
logical,
mm-hmm.
meaningful discussion. Now, everybody got a compromise. You know, the fundamentalists say that the world was made in 6 days because of the psalm that says, you know, 1,000 years are like a day in your sight, because they didn't read the other half of the passage, or as a watch in the night. And a watch was a period of 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So that phrase is obviously metaphorical.
Yeah.
And it cannot be taken literally as a physical principle unless you ignore half of what the word is. You know, if the word of God is Christ, and say, okay, we're going to read his arm, but we're going to cut it off at the shoulder. We're not going to read the rest of it. We'll just look at the arm and say that's the standard. That's how denominations got started.
Yeah, I bet so.
Somebody got the inspiration of a hand, and then they decided in their foolish, arrogant minds that all of Christianity is a hand, and everyone should be a hand. So you're going to be that denomination. And the ears started their own denomination, and the feet started their own denominations. That's how it started, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, it's in worse shape today than when Constantine stepped on the, the Gnostics.
Yeah. That was rough.
All right. Where was I? Should I keep rambling here? What am I?
Well, I guess we can close at this point, and then can you do another show with us, do you think, after Irma has passed,
sure.
Of course?
Sure.
That would be great.
Yeah, let me add one thing just to just take a minute. Just give people another morsel here.
Sure.
What this says, and it has a lot to do with time as well. All right? Remember the miracle where Jesus fed the thousands of people with 5 loaves and 2 fishes?
Mm-hmm.
All right, now that's supposed to be a question of faith. Miracle, you know, you're not supposed to understand it traditionally. But here's the thing. All those fishes had as their pattern a body of information that defined that fish. Each fish and
mm-hmm.
each loaf. That information
mm-hmm.
exists. All right? And
mm-hmm.
reality, the way God made it, allows information to be materialized into the physical world. Now, notice what it says. It doesn't say that Jesus multiplied those fishes. It doesn't say that. It said he fed the thousands of people with the exact same 5 loaves and 2 fishes.
Yes.
So the exact same 5 loaves and 2 fishes were in thousands of places at the same coordinate in time. And that's what starts putting all this together, those kinds of concepts. So I wanted to toss out that last little tidbit out there.
To keep everybody salivating till the next show. I get it.
There is this Christian show, so I'm going to speak to my fellow Christians. Like I say, I don't normally get to do this in a lot of interviews.
Well,
there
we'll
is a foundation for your faith. Yeah.
Yes, it is. Lord willing, we will keep doing this. Chris, you want to take us out with a prayer? And Thomas, thank you so much.
And like you, Thomas, I've always been skeptical, but then the evidence of a creator just keeps adding up, kind of like you just don't find Rolex watches floating up from the mud puddle. It takes a designer, and we've got a very incredible timepiece that we live in here in this universe. But I'll say a quick prayer. Father in heaven, we do thank you for this day you've made. We will rejoice and be glad in it, and we thank you for Thomas's ministry, and thank you that science and the creator of science don't have to be in conflict. We thank you how it builds our faith, and that we just love the fact that we're alive and living in the times we live in, whether they be scary or calm. We know that the creator of all things is not nervous, and we're not nervous either. In Yeshua, Jesus, the Messiah's name, I pray. Amen.
Amen.
God bless you, Thomas. Thank you for joining us. And Chris, thanks for dialing in. And we'll get Tim on next time also, okay?
Sure will.
All right.
God
bless
you, folks.
Thanks, Thomas.
Thank you. God bless.
Love the music.